You're listening to The Murder in My Family, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including Missing Persons, Scene of the Crime,
DNA ID,
Three Men and a Mystery,
Malice, Zodiac Speaking, Riddle Me That,
and All Things Crime. All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the podcast, its host, or sponsors.
If you would like to discuss the murder in your family on this podcast, please be sure to visit themurderinmyfamily.com for more information.
You can support this podcast by visiting patreon.com/themurderinmyfamily. This episode may contain unsettling material or subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Thank you for joining me for episode 83 of The Murder of My Family. I'm your host, Mike Morford. In this episode, we'll be discussing the tragic and very recent murder of 29-year-old mother of three, Melissa Neese, who was gunned down in her own Florida home early in 2021. We'll dive into Melissa's story after some quick housekeeping. Independent podcasts like this one depend on word of mouth to bring in new listeners. So if you find that you enjoy this podcast, please take a minute to rate and review it wherever you listen to your podcast, and be sure to introduce a friend of the show and invite them to listen. With your help, The Murder of My Family can continue to grow and reach a new audience. To learn more about the show or the cases we discuss, please visit themurderofmyfamily.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @murderofmyfam or by searching for The Murder of My Family podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to support the show through a Patreon donation, it's always appreciated. And you can do so by visiting patreon.com/themurderofmyfamily. Benefits of supporting the show on Patreon include early access to ad-free episodes of the show, plus bonus content not heard in regular episodes. Support may also include thank you cards, stickers, and more. If you prefer to, you can also support the show through a PayPal donation by visiting paypal.me/themurderofmyfamily. In each episode, I'll give shoutouts to any new supporters. And thank you to all of the supporters that generously donate and help keep the show growing and improving. One last note. Please consider supporting any of the sponsors that you hear on The Murder of My Family, the way that those sponsors support this show. It's with our sponsors' support that The Murder of My Family can go on and continue to provide a platform to share these stories with you in every episode. Thank you. And now on with the show. On February 28th, 2021, just after 4 p.m., 29-year-old Melissa Neese was found dead by a family friend in her Oklawaha, Florida home in Marion County. She had been fatally shot while she was home alone. Since then, Melissa's family is desperate for answers and need your help in solving this very fresh case. Melissa Marie Neese was born on December 31, 1991 in Libertyville, Illinois. Her family moved to Sereno, Florida when she was 8 years old. Melissa graduated from Tavares High School in 2010. She had two daughters, Nevaeh and Jalea, ages 10 and 2, as well as an 8-year-old son named Jalen. She was also a loving figure to her long-term boyfriend's son. Melissa's family remembers her as a wonderful mother, a beloved sister, cousin, aunt, and daughter. Her friends remember her as a loving person who was friendly and trusting of everyone she met. On Friday, February 26th, Melissa's boyfriend and the kids headed out on a trip to Tennessee to see the snow, something they couldn't do in Florida. Melissa would have joined too if she hadn't just gotten a new job, which required her to work. Just days before her death, Melissa started a job doing clerical work for an office in Leesburg, Florida. The secluded location of the home Melissa shared with her boyfriend allowed the killer or killers to move freely without being seen. Perhaps somehow they knew of plans for the family to be away in Tennessee and didn't count on finding Melissa at home when they made their way into the house. Whatever the case, it surely was shocking for both the intruders and Melissa when they got inside. The perpetrators weren't worried, or perhaps didn't know about the family pit bull. Unfortunately, the dog was crated when they entered the home and couldn't offer any kind of defense to Melissa. We don't know what happened inside the home other than Melissa being shot. According to Melissa's boyfriend, she didn't answer his messages the entire time he and the kids were gone. When police looked around the home, they didn't see any obvious signs of robbery, so it was hard to establish a motive. Luckily, a surveillance camera outside of the home captured video of at least one man fleeing from the house. The man seen on surveillance video is wearing a medical-style mask, a long-sleeve shirt or light sweatshirt, and a beanie. As he flees, he trips over a piece of patio furniture and seems to fall hard to the ground. It's possible this person was injured or limping in the days following the murder. Authorities are asking for the public's help in identifying the man in the video. On March 11th, the Marion County Sheriff's Office released stills and short video clip from the security camera. You can view the photos and the video of the suspect online. Unfortunately, the video was taken at night, and it looks like it was infrared, so the colors the man is wearing are skewed, and the darkness, plus his mask, make it hard to see his features. You can also see the chair that he tripped over in the video. Two suspects have reportedly been identified by police, but their names haven't been released. Melissa's sister, Amy Harris, doesn't want her sister's murder to turn into a cold case like so many others. As of the release of this episode, it's been 2 months since Melissa's killer or killers slipped away into the night, and as of now, they haven't been arrested. This means that as time goes on, it may be harder to solve, especially if the suspects can leave town or cover their trail before anyone finds out who they are. If you have any information about the murder of Melissa Neese, please call Marion County Sheriff Detective Daniel Pinder at 352-368-3508. If you want to remain anonymous but you think you have information, call Marion County Crime Stoppers at 352-268-7867 and be sure to reference 21-20 in your call. Melissa's boyfriend is offering a $20,000 reward for information that helps lead to Melissa's killer or killers. Even if you don't have information yourself, you can help by sharing this podcast on social media or sharing the details of Melissa's case, especially if you're in the state of Florida. Someone out there knows the suspect. By sharing this case on social media, it's more likely that someone will recognize the man in the video and come forward with the right information. I sat down with Melissa's sister, Amy, to talk about the still unfolding mystery. That conversation is coming up in just a moment. Hey everyone, spring is here, and for many people, this is a time when we want to get out and get active. But for some of us, that's easier said than done, because often, things that have been weighing on us don't magically go away with the change of seasons. But the good news is, there is help, and that help is called BetterHelp. If there's something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, then BetterHelp Online Counseling just might be the right solution for you. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can connect in a safe and private online environment. It's so convenient, and you can start communicating with a counselor in under 24 hours. This isn't self-help. It's professional counseling. Send a message to your counselor at any time. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. BetterHelp can assist you with so many things, from trauma, depression, and anger issues, to LGBT matters, grief, stress, and so much more. Anything you share is confidential, and while BetterHelp isn't a crisis line, it is convenient, professional, and affordable. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener of The Murder of My Family, you'll get 10% off your first month of BetterHelp by visiting betterhelp.com/family. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Once again, go to BetterHelp, that's HELP.com/family, and you'll save 10% on your first month of BetterHelp. Hey everyone, I'm excited to tell you about our sponsor, Every Plate, America's best value meal kit. With Every Plate, you'll get meals you'll enjoy and your bank account will love, delivered right to your door contact-free. Every Plate dinners are the less expensive and more fulfilling alternative to takeout or delivery. More bang for your buck. Think of it this way. One meal from Every Plate is the same price as a cup of coffee. Getting dinner on the table daily used to be a challenge. Now let Every Plate plan, shop, and deliver everything you need to cook a delicious meal at a delightful price. I have to admit, at first I was skeptical. I thought meal kits might be expensive, but now I'm convinced you can get the same deliciousness at a much lower price with every plate. My family and I tried the pork and pineapple tacos and the caramelized onion burgers, and they were fantastic. Now you can try every plate yourself for just $1.99 per meal, plus get an additional 20% off your next two boxes by going to everyplate.com and entering code FAMILY199. Once again, go to everyplate.com and enter code FAMILY199 to get every plate delivered to your home for just $1.99 per meal, plus an additional 20% off your next two boxes. Hi, Amy, and thanks for coming on the Murder My Family to discuss your sister Melissa's case.
Hi, how are you?
We're happy to have you here, and hopefully we can help spread awareness on this case. It's really fresh. It's been, just a little over a month since your sister Melissa was killed. So this is a time where we can still try and make a difference, hopefully, while the case is fresh and get people talking, and maybe someone will come forward. How tough is this last month been on you and your family?
It's been extremely, extremely difficult knowing that somebody took her and we have no answers. She left behind a 10, 8, and 2-year-old. That's even more difficult because we have no answer for her children. I just don't understand.
I can't imagine it would be hard on any family member, let alone three young children. My heart really goes out to them. I think, as you mentioned, how do you explain that their mom is no longer there in this kind of situation?
It's extremely difficult, especially when she was a stay-at-home mom for so long, and now they have nothing. They were out of town, came back, and their mom's gone.
Before we get into what we know about the case and what happened, can you tell us a little bit about Melissa, what kind of person she was?
Yeah, Melissa was a very, very trusting person. She, no matter what kind of person somebody was, she always gave them benefit of a doubt. She always seemed positive in people. She was a straight-A honor roll student. Me and her actually went to college together for paralegal. She was just a great, great mother. That was her passion. That was her love. Her kids were her world. She was funny, goofy. She was just friendly to everybody. It's not like she ever had an enemy. I mean, I've never met one person that she was enemies with. Everybody just absolutely adored her. Even if they did fight with her, she was back friends with them because she just never was mean to anybody. That's what makes it so odd to me.
Were the two of you close?
Oh, extremely close. Me and her had a big age gap. I was 10 when she was born. So she was more like my daughter than my sister. She was like my first child. And we were extremely close. Like I said, we went to college together years and years later after I'm out of school. We went to college. We went 2 years together to get our paralegal degree. We had kids, her middle child that is 8, one of my kids. We had babies 4 days apart in the same room. So there's a lot of things that we did together. And I'll never have that back.
Yeah, that's a sisterly bond. Two close sisters is something that's not easily replaced.
Yeah. Even like Facebook memories, every day something comes up that we then posted back and forth to each other. You know, going to a store reminds me of her. Just the stupid, silly way that she would act sometimes. You know, it's difficult, and it's difficult to know that somebody that was so kind, so sweet, so beautiful. I mean, my sister was maybe 100 pounds soaking wet. She was no threat to nobody. She was kind. She was tiny. She was petite. And somebody just took her away. I just don't understand why they would do that. They're evil.
Well, and this happened in Marion County, yeah. Florida.
Correct.
Do you live there as well?
No, I live about 30 minutes away.
Okay.
From there.
What's the town that she lived in like? Is there any kind of crime? Does this kind of thing happen there? Or was this pretty shocking to the community there?
I mean, there is crime there, but it's a very small area. It's a wooded area right outside of Ocala National Forest. So I will admit there's a lot of drug activity because a lot of people that live in woods, unfortunately, have drug addiction. But where she lived was very rural. Nobody just goes to this area and does what they did to her. It's just, you know, a smaller community. Once you get to Ocala area, it's a lot bigger. But Akawaha is very, it's a small town.
Some searching and saw some pictures, and it seems like it is pretty wide open. It's not the type of place where you have houses piled on top of each other. So there wasn't really anyone around to witness or come forward with any information, right?
No, not even a house with cameras. There were three houses on her road. She was the middle house. And the lady next door, you know, gunfire was not unknown out there because it is a rural area. So people do go shoot guns, but there's not many people out there at all. Like, you have to know where you're going to be out there.
Yeah, so even hearing a gunshot, if a neighbor heard one, wouldn't necessarily mean that they thought something was wrong.
Right, exactly. Whereas I live in the city, if I hear a gunfire, I'm looking. There, it's just something, you know, they live in the woods.
Yeah. And Melissa lived there with her boyfriend, is that correct? And her three kids?
Correct.
How long had they been living in that home?
2 years. 2 years they had been living in that home.
Had they ever had any issues with anyone in the neighborhood? Any beefs or gripes with anyone?
Nope. They only had two neighbors. So, and one lady, she lives there alone. And the other one, they had got evicted from what I understand. They were there during the time, but they were in the process of getting evicted.
So there was really no issues that anyone knew of going on with any of the neighbors or anything like that?
Correct. None that I'm aware of.
Let's go back to February 28th. That's just, I'm looking now, it's 5-6 weeks ago. Essentially, Melissa's kids went on a trip to see some snow in Tennessee with Melissa's boyfriend. Was that a usual thing? Did they typically go that distance? I think we're talking like 500 miles or something like that. Was there family there they were going to visit too, or was that just like a spur of the moment type trip?
From what I understand, it was a planned trip. His grandmother and his brother went. Melissa did not go, which this is the first time Melissa did not go out of town with her kids. I was told it was planned. They were going to Gatlinburg to go see snow, and I guess the resort makes snow, and they were going sledding and stuff. It has been confirmed that he was there. There's pictures that he was there. They went for the weekend. He was supposed to be back that Sunday, and he ended up coming back that Monday morning.
And who was it that discovered Melissa had been shot?
It was a family friend that was known to come to the house quite a bit. But he had a key to the house. It wasn't unusual for him to come back and forth to the house. He would, you know, help with the dogs, or he had a four-wheeler out there, and he lives not far from their house.
And can you relay what he has recounted what he witnessed when he walked into the house, what he found?
The only thing that I was told, and I have not talked to him personally, I mean, we've seen each other, but we have not talked about it together. The only thing that I was told is that she was hurt. I was at work. I'm in the medical field. I work maybe about 20 minutes away from their home, maybe 30 at the most. And when I got the call at 4:20. And I remember the person that called me was Melissa's best friend. All she told me was, Melissa's hurt. I need to get to her house. So me assuming that, you know, something just happened, I started calling out the hospitals. They kept telling me that she wasn't there because there's quite a few hospitals in different directions that they would have sent somebody. So when I pulled up to the crime, I pulled up to her house and there's nothing but yellow tape around her house. And they kept all of us apart from each other. He was on the other side of the road and I was on the other. And I remember just standing there knowing that she's not coming back once I've seen the crime scene tape. But nobody would let me even know how she was deceased, what happened. It wasn't until a couple days later that Marion County had put out a report that she was shot.
So you pull up to the scene and you know when you see yellow tape like that, there's something bad that happened.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's overwhelming when you pull up to something and you see the crime scene tape, you automatically, you know, I stood there for hours. I stood there for hours because, you know, they don't just come out and say, oh, your sister is deceased. You stand there. They got to verify who she is. They go over and I'm assuming they take pictures or, you know, anything else that they do there. So I stood there for a good 5 to 6 hours just looking at the house, unable to do anything.
Sort of in shock, I guess.
Yeah, I was in shock out of anybody. I mean, why somebody so little? And then I was so graceful at the same time, which sounds stupid, but she was the size of her 10-year-old daughter. They're pretty much the same size. That could have been my niece at 10 years old. I mean, like I said, my sister was very petite. And I just stood there looking like, what if the kids were there? And just wishing that it was a bad dream, that it wasn't true. And sometimes I still feel like that. Like I just want to wake up and say, you know, this isn't true.
And was it accurate that your sister was still alive when that friend arrived there?
From what I understand, no. There was no possible way. All I knew that there was blood involved.
And you mentioned you didn't even know till the next day that she had been shot.
Correct. They would not release that information. They just told me that she was deceased. And they said it was under investigation. They didn't even tell me it was a homicide.
Were they able to determine or did they confirm with you a time of death?
No, all they told me, it was between midnight and the next morning before sunrise.
And do you know, was there any kind of signs of a break-in or a struggle in the house? Any kind of fight that happened there?
There was a break-in struggle towards her. I don't believe so.
And do you know if anything was taken or stolen or?
Nothing that we're aware of. Everything is still accountable.
I take it, though, the main clue that they have is this home video surveillance of a man fleeing the scene. And just to describe it for listeners, in what I viewed, and maybe you can chime in and tell me if this is what you agree with, it seems like it's a black and white video, and you can see a man with looks like a wool beanie type hat and a COVID mask maybe on his face It seems like he's racing on foot, and he actually trips over a chair, and it seems like he goes down on the ground pretty hard. And I wonder if maybe the next day he was limping or injured in some way. I'm sure that you've looked at that video a million times. Does that person look familiar to you?
No. The video that they give us, I've been looking and looking and looking and looking and trying to go over. I compare with everybody. I even, when I go to the store, I'm comparing people that I walk by. If I, you know, I'm comparing everybody. The problem with the video that they gave us is very grainy. But anybody that is related to this person, at this point in time with the corona, everybody has seen somebody with a mask. Okay? So somebody has seen this person with a mask on their face. Okay? Because everybody has to wear a mask at one point in time. There's a mother, there's a sister, there's a child that knows that this is their family. They know this person. Those eyes, to me, look distinct. They have like a sunken look into them. The shape of the nose, the shoes on his feet that light up. Somebody knows something. I mean, if you know your loved one, you know how they walk. You know how they go to run. You know what their eye looks like, what their sunkenness of their eyes are, their nose structure. Everybody has seen somebody with a mask. So even though he's wearing a mask, somebody has seen him with a mask in the past, and they can tell that that's their family.
And they should do the right thing and come forward and share
information. Definitely. I mean, even though that's your family member, you think about these kids. These kids are without their mother because of what this man, well, men, should I say, because they only release one man. There are two men that are involved. What kind of man are you if you kill a woman that's 100 pounds and are out there living your life like it's nothing and not even caring that these children are without their mother and that they're crying for them? The two-year-old at the funeral kept pointing to the coffin when we were getting ready to lower her in and kept saying, my mommy, because she knew her mommy was in there. That's not okay. Somebody took her away from them children for no reason. And I just don't understand it.
And just to clarify, too, you mentioned there are two suspects. So there's really only one in the video. Is it because they're out of frame or they chose not to release video of the other suspect? Do you know why they came to believe there's two and not just one person?
From what I understand, they said they didn't. They're just not releasing it, which I don't understand because, you know, movement, the way people move, the way people do things, that's how you know. And I don't even know if they may have a lead on the other person. But the video that you look at, and when you look at it, there's floodlight cameras. So you got to remember that. That light came on. When he ran, that light probably flashed back on because it's one of those lights that if you get under, the light's going to come on. So it's also going to brighten things up. I'm not sure if that man was the shooter or not, but the way that he ran is like he was scared. And I'm not sure what he was scared of. There were also dogs in the house, but they were crated. So that's another alarming thing to me because I'm also married to an African-American man. But I don't know many African-American men that are going to come into a house and hear barking unless they know they're crated. So that's what I'm not understanding is, like, I wish them dogs would have been out. I really, it's in my head every day why them dogs weren't out. One of them was a very large pit bull. it just doesn't make sense to me. It makes no sense. Her house is in a rural area, not a place that you would hit. It's a house full of dogs. Somebody would had to know the dogs were crated to know to just go into a home, because I'm not going to into a house hearing a bunch of dogs barking. And the way that he ran, he looked scared. He looked like, you know, something went down that wasn't supposed to go down. I don't know if he was scared of the dogs or if he was scared of what had just happened. But he totally trips over that chair, which is still in the backyard. I don't understand. And if you were, if you weren't scared to go into a home, what scared you at that point to run the way that you did?
Yeah, and like you mentioned, someone might recognize his walk or his clothing. They might recognize him, his body motion trying to get out of there. And the fact he tripped, he may have had some kind of injury the next day or a limp or something. Maybe someone remembers that. I think for listeners, if you just Google Melissa Neese video, you can find this video and see what we're talking about here. Do you know if police have anything else to work with besides the video itself, or is that their main clue?
From what I understand, that's their main clue, but yet again, they won't give me anything. The only thing they'll say is it's an open investigation. So I'm not sure if they have anything else. And it's very hard being a family member, just sitting back and waiting, hoping that they have something. And not being able to even know what's being done. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier, too, that Melissa's boyfriend was in Tennessee at the time. Has he been cooperative and ruled out as far as possibly being involved in any way? Because a lot of times in cases like this, the police start with those closest to the victims.
I don't know about ruling out. He has been cooperative, but I don't know. The police don't even come. I haven't known them to even interview anybody. And besides us at the scene and, of course, him and his grandmother. So I don't know who's actually the suspects, because they won't even give me that. They just keep telling me that everybody is a suspect at this point in time.
Can you talk about whether his and Melissa's relationship was good as far as you could tell? No issues there?
It was a normal, they would fight, they wouldn't fight. So to be honest, I didn't get too much into their relationship. So it wasn't perfect. And I know that. But other than that, I don't know.
Have you thought about people that might have a motive, or anyone that might have been upset with Melissa, or anything like along those lines?
Oh, yes. And there's nobody. And I guess you hear a lot of times that people always say, you know, my family member was a good person. They didn't have enemies. But seriously, she didn't. She didn't have enemies. Which makes it strange to me. Now, he might have, but she would never. Like, just the person that she was a very passive, loving person. There wasn't, like, anger in her. She wasn't somebody that fought with people. She always had a smile on her face. Everybody just ignored her because she was just like one of those people that don't fight, don't argue with you. So that's what makes it even worse, because it's not like she was a person that would, you know, I have a lot of anger. I can get angry fast. She didn't have that, you know. I'm a type of person that I tell people how it is. She's not like that. She was a very passive person. She had no, like, anger, no aggression, no anything.
So just no known enemies, just nothing that comes to mind, anyone that would want to hurt her.
Nothing at all, and just absolutely nothing. I mean, I haven't found one person, not one person that could say anything that, you know, me and your sister didn't get along, or anybody that knew Melissa got along with her.
Let me ask you this question. You mentioned that there's not a lot of serious crime, maybe some drug activity in the area. Is it possible that perhaps someone knew the family was going away or thought they were all going away and maybe tried to break into the house to rob it and didn't expect Melissa to be there? Has that been looked into, do you know?
That's one of our theories. And I would think if they killed her, she had to know who. Maybe she surprised them. Maybe she heard the dog barking, came out, didn't think anything, didn't have time to run and noticed who the person was. But it's just so strange that they did it on a Sunday. Maybe they were aware they were still out of town. Well, they did it on a Saturday. Sorry, it was that Sunday morning. But it's so strange to me, but it's not impossible. And maybe when they got there, they got scared.
And I guess maybe your mind has raced in 1,000 different directions trying to think of any kind of possible scenario.
I've looked at everything. And like I said, I haven't slept since this happened very well. I have looked over everybody's picture, anybody that they've known, that I'm aware of. I just look at pictures and try to figure out, do they match? Does their nose match? Does their forehead match? Does the eyes match? Because I don't think I'm going to be able to rest until I know. And I refuse to let this case go cold. I refuse. I'm going to be out there and I'm going to call these detectives every day until something is found.
And obviously, you mentioned they're not, the detectives are not forthcoming with a lot of information, and maybe they don't want to tip their hand. Maybe they just don't want to release anything that might give something away, which I understand. But at the same time, you want them to stay in touch with you and feel like something's being done, I imagine.
Yeah, like I told the cop, it's not that I don't want to say they're not doing their job, but how do I know you're doing your job? How do I know things are being done correct? I have no clue. Because without knowing anything or getting anything, there's no way of me knowing what's being done. And just sitting back is like the hardest thing. I'm out there talking to people. I went to the bars out there. I went to, people everywhere. I'm on social media. I even put my phone number on social media, because if you're afraid to come to the cops, come to me. Just tell me something. You can call Crime Stoppers. You can call whoever you feel more comfortable with. I will not put your name in it, but at least if you tell me something, this person can, maybe brought to justice. And I know a lot of people are afraid to talk to a cop, or maybe they're afraid to talk to anybody because they're afraid this could be them. I won't give your name. You don't even have to give me your name. You can call me anonymously. My phone number is out there. If you want to call me, call me. Just to drop a hint to me.
Yeah.
Anything.
Mail a letter or something, just, without your name on it. Just provide some names. Have you started a Facebook page or anything, any kind of website for people to contact you as well, or to get the story out there more?
No, my Facebook is Amy Harris. I'm open to any inboxes. There are some people that started some Facebook, like Justice for Melissa Neese. I don't know the people. So there were a couple people that had already started it. So I didn't want to just, nobody would have known whose is what, but they are more than happy to contact me on Facebook. Anything. anything they can give. Like you said, they can write me a letter. They don't have to put their name in it. They can do anything that they need to do. Just please talk. I mean, this person's living their life, and it's not fair. It's not fair at all.
Yeah. And of course, this is anyone with information can also contact Detective Daniel Pinder at 352-368-3508. Or contact the Marion County Crime Stoppers. Do the right thing and come forward so that this case doesn't become a cold case. You know, before you know it, a year's gone by and you're still not making any progress. That's the last thing that I'm sure you want.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I want to be able to tell these children, the person that took your mom is caught. They're serving time for it.
And I think the key here is that video. Hopefully people will share it on social media, because I think you're right. I think someone out there knows this person, knows the way they dress, knows the way they move. If that person hears this podcast episode and listens to it, what would you want to say to them if they could hear your voice?
Just have a heart. Understand this could have been your family member. I mean, have some compassion for these kids. Understand that, you know, somebody's mother is gone. Whether this is your family member and you're trying to protect them or not, three children are without their mother. Please talk. Tell something. This could have been somebody you loved. I mean, imagine these kids trying to go to bed at night, knowing that their mom's not coming home. Never be at their wedding. She'll never be a grandmother. She'll never see her children walk down the aisle and get a high school diploma. I mean, imagine the rest of these children's lives knowing. I mean, that's unimaginable. It's not even okay in the least bit. It's not like she was in a car accident or had a heart attack and died. Somebody took her away. That's one of the hard things.
Yeah, and they've got to grow up knowing that. I don't know how much they know now about the details, but at one day they'll want to know more, and it's just going to be devastating for them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And even the 10-year-old, she's so smart. She's so beautiful, like her mother. She said, I'm sorry.
Take your time.
She said, how is Sissy, the youngest one, that's two, how is Sissy ever going to remember Mom? She's going to have the memories. So she's 10 years old and realizes that this 2-year-old never going to know how beautiful her mother and how sweet her mother was.
Sometimes kids see things and realize things at a young age that, you know, that kind of wisdom at that age, it's sad that she knows that at this point.
It's terrible. It's so hard knowing that these poor kids know that their mother is not coming back.
I hope that you get answers. I hope the people in the area share the video of that person, share this podcast. We'll definitely try and get the word out as much as possible for you so that people can spread the information and let everyone know about Melissa's case. And to the person, the people that were there, the person that's captured on video, maybe you send a message of how long before the other person turns on you, or, you know, turns you into police, or tries to get themselves a deal. That's one thing they should consider. Or maybe they do worse. Maybe they don't want to leave a witness that can pin them to the murder. So I think the two people that are there should be really considering going to police now and doing the right thing.
Exactly. One of you shot and the other one ran. That's the way it looks to me. somebody, how do you go to bed at night knowing that you took a woman's life and you're a man? You're supposed to be a man. I just, you know, doesn't it eat you up inside that you took such a young, beautiful woman away? How do you sleep at night? Turn yourself in, you know, turn the person that did it. Maybe it's something you didn't expect, but the other person did this.
Yeah.
And you're the one with the answers.
That's a good point, because as you mentioned, if the one person didn't know this was going to happen and wasn't expecting this, maybe they can work out a deal where they talk to the police and can help themselves out and get the other person prosecuted. So, you know, self-preservation is very powerful. People want to save their own hide. So if it means the person that didn't pull the trigger tries to help themselves by naming the person that did, they should seriously consider doing that.
Exactly. And not only just to save yourself, but save you from being able to, the nightmares at night. I mean, because it's got to bother you. If you're a human being with feelings, that's got to be eating you alive.
Yeah. And the person's probably looking over their shoulder every day as well.
Exactly.
Well, Amy, I can't thank you enough for sharing Melissa's case with us. I know this has been a difficult stretch for you, and I hope for your sake, and especially for Melissa's children, that there is an arrest made here and this doesn't drag on to turn into a cold case.
Greatly appreciate it, and I hope just it gets the word out and somebody comes forward.
Thanks again for joining me for this episode of Murder My Family. Please, this case may be one tip away from being solved. If you have any information about the murder of Melissa Neese, please call Marion County Sheriff Detective Daniel Pinder at 352-368-3508. And if you want to remain anonymous but still provide a tip, call Marion County Crime Stoppers at 352-268-7867. And even if you don't have a tip, you can still help this case perhaps by sharing on your social media. Melissa's story just has to get in front of the right person. I want to thank Sonny Landon for writing and research assistance in this episode. As we wrap up, I'd like to play a preview for you of a new podcast called The Path Went Chilly. And if you're a true crime fan, you'll recognize some of the hosts, so be sure to check it out. We'll be back soon with an all-new episode of The Murder of My Family, and I hope you'll join me for it. But before you go, remember that every murder victim means something to somebody.
Hi, I'm Robin Warder from The Trail Went Cold. If you are unfamiliar with my other podcast, I often cover stories from the television show Unsolved Mysteries. For the past 5 years, you've heard me talk about these cases on my own, but now's your chance to hear me have in-depth discussions about them with other people. I want to welcome you to my new project, The Path Went Chilly, where I will be discussing in-depth with my two good friends and co-hosts cases that I've covered on The Trail Went Cold. Meet my co-hosts. First one up is Jules.
Hi, I'm Jules from the podcast Riddle Me That True Crime, and I have a PhD in transpersonal counseling. I'm not a psychologist or a diagnostician, so don't get too excited. But I can't wait to analyze these cases with these two amazing humans. You've already met Robin, now meet Dr. Ashley Wellman.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I have a PhD in criminology, law, and society, and I specialize in trauma victims and survivors. I've spent a great deal of time working with families left behind after homicides with a cold case unit based out of Florida, and I'm also a professor of criminology. I'm so excited to be chatting with two of my best friends about the cases that everyone can't seem to get enough of.
We hope in doing so that we will have a clearer perspective of what may have transpired. Oftentimes, Ashley will be totally in the dark.
Jules and I will be telling Ashley a story she may not know much about, so all of her reactions are genuine.
We will be releasing on all major platforms April 8th.
We hope you will join us as we attempt to heat up some ice-cold cases.
The Path Went Chilly will be available every Thursday on all major podcast platforms.